This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan. There is a revolution ongoing in Myanmar. The people of Myanmar of various political ideologies and regions are engaging in civil disobedience and have also taken up arms against the military junta. There have been talk about forging a new constitution and building a new Myanmar beyond and free from the junta. But where do the ethnic minority Rohingyas fit into this picture? After all, the Rohingya people have been subject to oppression, dispossession, and genocide for decades, even before the recent coup. Millions of displaced Rohingyas are refugees in various parts of the world, including here in Malaysia. On today's show, I'll be speaking to Rone San Luin. He's a Rohingya activist. He's the co-founder of the Free Rohingya Coalition and is currently based in Germany. As always, this conversation is also available as podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Ne San Luin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So, I want to start this conversation by getting to know you a little bit better. So, tell us, who is Ne San Luin and what do you do?
I was born in Budirang Township of Rakhine State in Myanmar during the first massive wave of violence against the Rohingya in 1978. The operation called Dragon King Operation. So my parents were the civil servant. So they moved to the former capital, Rangoon, now the commercial capital, in 1984. So basically, I was raised in Rangoon. So I studied there until I completed my university in 2001. And then I left from the country. The reason I left from the country, not because of the persecution faced by the Rohingya in Rakhine State, but the different type discrimination. Everyone called me Kala instead of calling my name Ne San Luin. So I really feel unbearable for me, you know. I have a name, everyone, they call each other their name. But for me, because I am a Muslim, that is why they call me Kala, you know. So I left from the country in 2001 and I was working in Saudi Arabia. And then I started the part-time activism while working there. And 10 years later, I had to come to Germany and sought the asylum because the Burmese embassy in Riyadh, they refused to renew my passport. So I became stateless and ended up my life as a refugee in Germany since then.
Could you describe what was life like growing up? Because I think a lot of people may not really understand the full experience of a Rohingya person, you know, growing up in Myanmar. And I think from a lot of people from the outside, it seems like right now Rohingya people, and for many decades, they have no rights. They face ethnic cleansing and all of that. But at the same time, you said your parents worked were part of the civil service. So could you contextualize that for us?
Well, you know, not only the Rohingya, but also other Muslim minority in the country, they were called Kala. Until now, there are the people still calling Kala, you know, using this term. So it is like if you are a Kala, you cannot join the government sector. If you join the private sector, there are some reservations for you. You will have the certain level of the promotion and then you will not get. If the company owner, the management is not racist, then you know you will have the opportunity. So my parents were the civil servant. My mother used to be a teacher. My father used to work for ministry. My grandfather were also the prominent officer in the town. We had the equal right as other nationality in Myanmar or Burma. Then this right were taken away by the military regime since the early 1970s. Even until 1982, most of the people, they had that right. After they entered the new citizenship law in 1982, we became stateless within our own country. And then, you know, slowly they downgraded everything. And as of now, we are just like prisoner inside the open air prison.
Before we talk about the coup, could you just give me an overview of who exactly are the Rohingya people? What are your origins and history, and how has the identity of the Rohingya people evolved over time?
Well, Rohingya are aboriginal people of Arakan State, now known as the Rakhine State, in Western Burma. Like the in Malaysia, it's called the Orang Asli, I think.
Yes.
We had the very long story, long history, but despite having all this, the military regime and all the government, we had only after the 1962, first coup happened. Then now is the third coup. During these three coup, we had only 5 years civilian government, but all, including the military regime and this civilian government, they denied our history. Citizenship law, which make us stateless, according to this citizenship law, we are still Tainta, I mean the indigenous people. The law said if one group want to be the indigenous, they have to be part of Burma before 1824. So in 1799, when the British surgeon Francis Buchanan traveled to Arakan and he had got this language research, he met with the Rohingya people, and in his report clearly mentioned that those living in Arakan, the Mohammedan called themselves Rohingya. Mohammedan means the Muslim, you know. So they called themselves Rohingya. They have been long settled in Arakan. So that means clear, you know, all our, you know, language also recorded there, but they didn't accept our history and deny our existence, and we became stateless according to their law. But after the independence of Burma, so Burma became in 1948. After 1948, we were accepted, and our ethnic identity, Rohingya, was recognized, and we had the full citizenship right. We even had a minister serving for the Ministry of Health, and we had the parliamentary secretary. Even before the independence of Burma, the founder of Burma, General Aung San, who is the father of Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, he founded the Constituent Assembly. Two Rohingya, including my great-grandfather, were the member of the Constituent Assembly. So we had the very long history of serving the government, serving the parliament. Those were slowly, you know, taken away after 1962. The late dictator Ne Win, the military general, coup the power in 1962. Since then, slowly, you know, he is downgrading our right. In the early 1970, he removed our ethnic name from the list, 144. And then in 1974, he launched an operation for 4 years just to take away national identity card from the Rohingya. And in 1978, for the first time, he launched the massive wave of violence against the Rohingya. He masterminded this new citizenship law, which makes us stateless.
And what is the impact of being stateless in essentially your own homeland?
Well, even, you know, in 1982, entered the citizenship law, still they didn't implement, but they implemented this citizenship law in 1993 by imposing several restrictions against the Rohingya. In Rakhine State, there are different ethnic groups. We are the second majority. Rakhine is the first majority. And then there are also other ethnic groups like the Myo, Kami, Marmaji, and the a small minority of the Khmer, they are the Muslim, but they are recognized as Tayanda indigenous, just to show the world that they don't recognize the Muslim. So they keep a small minority as an official ethnic group. By imposing all this restriction, we became the prisoner inside the open-air prison. So if you don't have the freedom of movement, just moving from one village to another, even the distance is just 3 to 4 minute walking distance, you still need the permission from your village administrator, get the all paperwork, and then you will have a paper just to show at the checkpoint. So that means, I mean, it's more worse than living inside the prison. You know, even in the prison, if you just talk to the your prison authority, you don't need a paper. You can just, you know, go to the another ward, maybe. So when we travel from one town to another, we need a lot of, you know, the paperwork. We need the permission from the different department, at least 5-6 department. Then the immigration officer will give us the permission to travel for 3 days or 7 days, maximum 2 weeks. That depends on how much you spend the money. I mean, for the permission from the village administrator, you need to pay. And the police station, you need to pay. Township, you need to pay. District, everywhere. In the northern Rakhine state, you can move from one town to another by having all this permission. But the, still, you know, that the state capital city, where you will find this all the healthcare specialists, doctor, you know, those surgeon, you can travel there. This, even if you spend, you know, the million money, you will have not have the permission. You are not allowed to go at all. And if you want to marry, you will have to submit the application. Then to obtain the permission, it takes 4 or 5 years. Sometimes they call the girl who is going to get them married, and then they said this is just, you know, just questioning, but finally they rape the bridegroom. This way, those who want to get them married, they don't submit the application. They just simply cross the border and ended up their life as an official, you know, the refugee or the illegal migrant in Bangladesh. If you are a small vendor, having a small stroll and selling something, then the police will come. Sometime the border guard police will come. Sometime the military will come, and they will ask. They will take your thing without settling the bill, and they will just simply open your drawer and take the money. This way, finally, you will end up bankrupt. So everywhere, wherever you go, you will face the police checkpoint or the military checkpoint. A checkpoint, they will just harass you. They will put in your pockets some, you know, the drug or the SIM card from the Bangladesh, and then, you know, they will just say that we found SIM card from your pocket or the drug from your pocket. If you don't pay the 500,000 jet or the 1 million jet, then we will jail you. So this happened everywhere, you know. So this is our life. There are a lot of other form of persecution, you know, harassment, torture, extortion, sexual violence, you know. So you name it, everything is there. So this is our life. Malaysia is hosting about 150,000 our refugees, thanks to Malaysia, Malaysian government, and also the people who are sympathizing us a lot.
Sometimes, especially in 2024, there is a tendency to look at Myanmar as pre-2020 coup and post-2020 coup, or NLD, or the democratic forces, the pro-democracy political party versus the junta. And people sometimes like to paint it as one side good guy, one side bad guy. Maybe for the general Burmese population, some truth to it. But if you're a Rohingya, if you're an ethnic minority, the people of Rohingya suffered ethnic cleansing, dispossession, villages being burnt down, people getting raped by authorities for decades and decades. even Aung San Suu Kyi, you know, for example, supported the junta's human rights abuses against the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Ethnic cleansing happened during Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD's time in power as well. Could you contextualize this for us?
In 2012, we had the quasi-civilian government led by the Thein Sein, who was a general. They created the communal violence. It was one-sided. 150,000 Rohingya were forced to leave their houses and huddled into the camp. They call the internally displaced camp, but it is almost like the concentration camp with the barbed wire. And so since then, these people are still inside the camp. And 2016, during the NLD government time. So since these people are trapped in the this open-air prison and this concentration camp, there are the young people desperate who want to find the freedom by taking up arms. So they attacked the three police outposts in Mondo in response from the government and the military. The government led by the Aung San Suu Kyi, 30 villages were burned down, 100 of Rohingya women were, women and girls were raped and the gang raped, and around 1,200 Rohingya elderly women, children were slaughtered, killed, shot dead. And then 3,000 had to flee to Bangladesh. So the same thing happened in 2017. So in 2017, this is a bit different. The government claimed that 30 police outposts and a battalion were attacked by the Rohingya Salvation Army. So the government and the military used this pretext to cleanse the Rohingya. So as a result, you know, 10,000 of people were killed. Even small babies were thrown into the fire. I mean, this... The soldier, they raped the women and the girl as young as 9 years old. So thousands of women, girls were raped, and about 380 villages were burned to the ground, and 750,000 had to flee to Bangladesh in a matter of 3-4 week time. So it was covered by most of the mainstream media. It was headlines, so most of the people know about it. So it happened during the NLD civilian government time. The government took military side and they favored the military side. You know, whenever the government minister were interviewed by the mainstream media, even the BBC or the other, you know, the media, they said Rohingya burned their own houses. That was the propaganda.
Aung San Suu Kyi was also dragged to the International Court of Justice, right?
When the Gambia filed a case against Myanmar at the International Court of Justice, Aung San Suu Kyi went to The Hague. I was in the courtroom along with my Rohingya brother and sister. We saw, you know, with our own eyes how she defended her partner military. So she and her government were complicit in the genocide. This is not simply ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing is a term. It has no legal definition and no law to take action. It is a genocide. So in Rakhine, we have the different ethnic group, but only the Rohingya are targeted. If you are traveling from one town to another, after you know you paid a lot of money to all the department, and then you got the permission and you are traveling by car, and at the checkpoint nobody need to get out from the car, but if you are a Rohingya, you need to get out from the car and show your paper. Still, you will be abused by those security servicemen. So basically, in the country, this military regime or the civilian government, all were the same. They had the same policy. So, I mean, the system in the country is to discriminate the Rohingya, abuse the Rohingya, expel the Rohingya from the country. So they all follow. This Aung San Suu Kyi, with respect in the country, she's called to Aung San Suu Kyi. And the world thought she was a human rights defender, democracy champion, but once she was, she got a lot of pressure for the Rohingya cause. She clearly said, I was a politician all the time, and I was not a human rights defender. So she was a normal politician. There are a lot of politicians, you know, they are very vocal to all this kind of atrocity, but she was just trying to secure her position. You know, going to The Hague as a Nobel laureate and defending the military, and also, you know, from her official Facebook page, she denied all the rape and called, you know, the fake rape. She is a woman, yeah? You know, as a woman, she can even sympathize those, you know, the rape victim.
On the show with me today is Roh Nay San Luin, Rohingya activist. We'll continue this conversation after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is Roh Nay San Luin. He's a Rohingya activist, and we're talking about the history of Rohingya people and their fight for a new Myanmar. This conversation will also be available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you're listening to this on Spotify right now, I would really, really appreciate it if you give us a follow, drop us a review. It would be really helpful. So, Nay, yeah. Fast forward to 2021. The military coup happened. How did the coup impact the Rohingya people? How did your lives, which the lives of Rohingya people, which was already terrible before the latest coup attempt, how did things change in 2021?
In the early of 2020, the International Court of Justice imposed the provisional ordered the provisional measure. So that means the Rohingya must be protected group in the country, but the NLD government also didn't comply with the order. And then after the coup in 2021, the military, as usual, they didn't comply because the military doesn't listen to anyone. So all this kind of restriction, everything are in place. So the people, you know, since they are, it is very hard to live in this condition. You know, imagine, you know, you cannot do anything. You cannot join for the job. You cannot continue study. So since the 1994 Rohingya student who got the, you know, high mark at the matriculation exam cannot join the medical institution, engineering, law, you know, the geology or anything, any professional institution. So we don't have any professional, you know, the people anymore because they are not allowed to join. In 2012, after this so-called communal violence, Rohingya students are not allowed to go to the university anymore. So for the Rohingya student, after the matriculation, you are done, you know, you cannot do anything. So this is the situation. So the people continuously fleeing. Some are taking the boat, risky journey. Some are, you know, they're taking the land route. You know, it depends on the human trafficker, smuggler. So those people tried to leave from the country, were arrested by the military after the coup. I mean, thousand and thousand people, you know, arrested. They were, initially, they were sentenced to 2 years with the hard labor, and later they increased up to 5 years. So this is the worst thing happened after the coup. Before that, at least, you know, they can leave the country. Yeah, of course, you know, during their journey, there are the torture by the harassment by the human trafficker on the boat. Some of them, you know, the lack of the food, they die in the sea. There are a lot of things, but still some people could make to their destination. But during, after the coup, you know, there were no way. The Navy arrested the people, the police. So a lot of, you know, the thousand of people are still in the jail. And all this kind of restriction are still in place. nothing improved. So the worst is that now there are the fighting between the Arakan Army. Arakan Army is the rebel group, predominantly the Rakhine Buddhists, and the Myanmar military. So they are fighting. The Arakan Army is fighting for the greater autonomy. So, of course, you know, I respect their self-determination, and they are fighting. But since, you know, the both sides, they take the they came inside the Rohingya villages, you know, we got a lot of casualties, especially since last November.
There is a revolution going on in Myanmar right now where, you know, I spoke to Tinza Shunlei, and she talked about how, you know, in 2021, it wasn't a successful coup. It was a coup attempt because the military has not succeeded at their goals. The people of Myanmar are resisting either through civil disobedience movements, but as the violence escalated by the military, people also took up arms, and now there are armed resistance groups all over the country fighting against the military junta. In many areas, they are winning and reclaiming areas and land from the military junta, reclaiming control. Where do the Rohingya people fit into this picture?
In the country, we were the most hated people by the majority Burmese, you know, until the coup. So everyone call us Kala, you know, the worst is that they call us the Bengali, not just simple Bengali, but who in Bengali meant the illegal Bengali. So they were accusing us we are the illegal immigrant from Bangladesh. So no one sympathized us during 2016 or 2017 or 2012. Until the 2012, the majority of the Burmese have no idea that we exist in the country. Because of all the restriction, you know, we are not allowed to travel to the capital or other states. So they have no idea these people are in the country. So in 2012, suddenly the violence against the Rohingya happened, and then the presidential office propagated that this, you know, the illegal Bengali are intruding the country, invading the country. So all this propaganda, you know, brainwashed the people. They really thought we are the illegal immigrant from Bangladesh. And 2016, 2017, we have the very good internet. No one sympathized. They are saying, like, you know, kill all this Kala. So only the handful of people, including the Tinza Shunlei, you know, she's like my sister. They only sympathize in the country. They only stand up for the Rohingya. Only a handful of people. But in 20, they thought, you know, that whatever we have been highlighting about our plight in the media, whatever the media covering, all these are the fake news. So in 2021, after the coup, when the same military, I mean, started, you know, killing them, you know, they're torturing them. Then, you know, when they see all this fake news over the state media, then they realize that, you know, this military has committed all this atrocity that amounted to genocide against the Rohingya. So we have one principle: being oppressed people, we will always stand with the oppressed, regardless of who they are, you know, regardless of the race, religion. Like in Malaysia, you know, all the Malaysian, I was in Malaysia just 2 weeks ago. I learned, you know, all the Malaysia, regardless of ethnicity and the religious background, they all are standing with the Palestinian people. That is really amazing that I found in Malaysia. You know? So for us also, we always stand with the oppressed people and regardless of who they are. So we offer our solidarity to these Burmese people, because they are already oppressed now. So this way we build the solidarity among us. And finally, you know, they understood us. But one thing is, how despite, you know, we supported this revolution, we want to be part of this revolution. Even, you know, our Rohingya young people, they want to take arm and fight against the military, along with the, all other, you know, the Burmese and the other ethnic minority across the country. But we had no chance, because how our people travel to Thai-Myanmar border and take the training and, you know, participate in this fighting, this is impossible at all. So in Rakhine State, the Arakan Army and the Rakhine people, they had also the similar feeling like us. Because in the late 2018, the Arakan Army launched the, you know, the resistance. I mean, they had the resistance group before, but they came to the battlefield and fight against the military. At that time, also the majority of the Burmese, they took the side with the military, and, you know, they were against the Rakhine. So when the military coup happened in 2021, Rakhine people, they said, we are not part of it. We will not be part of the this civil disobedience movement. We will not fight. We will just fight against the military for greater autonomy for us. So this way, in the Rakhine State also, we have no chance. From the Bangladesh camp, they cannot travel to this Thai-Myanmar border. So we are morally supporting. And at the international level, we have been, you know, the all those activists and the leader at the in the diaspora, we have been traveling across the world, you know, everywhere we go, we do the advocacy, whatever we can support, we are supporting. So they know that. But joining on the ground, particularly, is impossible for us.
Right. So from a political standpoint, what does that mean? Does the Rohingya have like a political front? Do they have political leadership? How are they fighting for their rights, especially within the context of this current ongoing revolution?
Well, inside the country, we have the three registered political party. Even, you know, the late dictator Ne-Win downgraded our citizenship and all the right. We had the voting right and the right to be elected until 2010. In 2015, we lost all this right. And we had the registered political party inside the country. So they have the limited. They are limited. You know, they cannot talk like us. You know, if they talk like us, they will be arrested. In the diaspora level, we have the lot of organization. Even in Malaysia, there are a lot of organization. So we all have the common goal, because, you know, all the oppressed people, they are disunited. To bring the unity is really difficult, because, you know, everyone is upset with the other doing, you know, because nothing has changed. Because all this happened because of the international failure. If we work together and get the action from the international community, still the people will try to work together. But, you know, since the international community is failing, they don't understand, you know, most of the people why this is, you know, not happening, why this is failing. So we are also kind of disorganized, but still we have the common goal. Some of the group are working together to bring the peace and the dignity for the people. So this way we continue, but still we are much better than the other, you know, the ethnic group in the country. In Myanmar, not only the Rohingya, but also the other ethnic minority are also persecuted. The military and the government commit that crime against humanity, war crime against them. But the crime against Rohingya is much worse than any other group. So we have the case at the International Court of Justice that was brought filed by the Gambia, an African country. And we had the case at the International Criminal Court that was intervened by the then prosecutor, not referred by the UN Security Council or by the, you know, the state party. So we have also another one case at the Argentinian Federal Court. It was filed by the Rohingya themselves. So for the justice, still, you know, there are some progress. And also we have a lot of support from the international community. There are a lot of donor countries supporting the humanitarian aid. Well, you know, we got the moral support, but practical support is very, very difficult, you know. Like 2 years ago, exactly 2 years ago, the U.S. determined the crime against Rohingya as the genocide and the crime against humanity, but nothing followed. And also there are the countries, they are talking about the justice and the accountability, but nothing followed. But still, you know, we are getting the humanitarian aid and support and the moral support, you know.
So you mentioned goal and justice. What does peace and justice for the Rohingya people look like to you?
Well, I mentioned you about our status after the independence of Burma until 1962. What we want is exactly this. Equal right, justice. We don't want, you know, something more than other group. So we should have the above 3 million population in the country. Now in the country, we have around 600,000. 130,000 are confined into the camp, in the concentration camp. The remaining are living under the open air prison. So 1.2 million are in Bangladesh. The rest are across the world. In India, 40,000. In Saudi Arabia, 250,000. In Pakistan, 250,000. In Malaysia, 150,000. And there's a small number in Indonesia, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe, America. So the peace is the equal right for us. The justice means we want to go back to our homeland with all this full right. And all those, the military or the government officer or minister, whoever, you know, involved in this, all the crime against the Rohingya, they should be punished. Since the 1962, military has committed a lot of crime against the Rohingya, against the ethnic minority, against the Burmese people as well. But the Burmese people almost, they forgot. In 1962, there was a student uprising and, you know, thousands were killed. In 1974, 1988, in 2007, the Saffron Revolution, even their Buddhist monks were beaten, killed. But they forgot, you know, when the Rohingya were being killed by this military, they said, our military are the good guys. So in 2021, after this attempted coup, they understood, you know, this military. In 3 years of the time, more than 70,000 houses were burned to the ground. 1,000 were killed. So the military enjoyed the impunity. That is why they keep committing the crime against Rohingya and the other, you know, the people in the country. This must be ended. And they have to compensate everything, you know, that they have burned down the 400 village. And the kill, all this, you know, we have to get the reparation. And we just want to live peacefully as others. We don't want anything extra. They have to give us a chance to develop our community. We don't want to have the presidential post or the prime minister post. We are not asking for all this. We just want our political right and the civil right. That is all. And the justice, this impunity must be ended. Within the country, you know, domestically and internationally, they have to be punished. Not only the Rohingya, but also all the people in the country, they will be safe from this kind of atrocity they are committing.
There is plenty of talk of forging a new constitution of Myanmar, you know, in a situation where the revolutionary forces come together, defeat the military junta. What many of the revolutionary forces, academics, activists, what they're saying is Myanmar needs a new constitution, and this constitution will not the military junta in it. And it's at least, the crafting of the constitution will not be led by the military junta. They are imagining a Myanmar beyond the military junta. Are Rohingya people included in these conversations?
Well, at least, you know, they are not calling us the Bengali anymore. They are calling us Rohingya. But it doesn't mean they recognize the Rohingya as an official ethnic group.
Right.
So they just, you know, they accepted the Rohingya are a citizen of Myanmar. The Rohingya has the citizenship right, but they are not recognizing the Rohingya as an ethnic group. So those who are involved in the drafting the new constitution, and since 2015, we didn't have any parliament member, so we cannot be part of, you know, their parliament. I mean, they have got the CRPH committee representing the Pidong Zulu Dom in the parliament. So we cannot be part of this one. We don't have the MP. And also they have got the National Unity Consultative Council, which is like the highest body that will draft the constitution. That in this one also we are not part of it. So still, I think the acceptance of the Rohingya need to be extended, and they should recognize the Rohingya as an official ethnic group. And then, you know, there will be all the way, you know, we can go in and work together for the betterment of the country. As of now, we have the limited access, frankly speaking. Just, you know, that they show the international community that they accept the Rohingya. But, you know, there are a lot of, but it's all are limited. We still need to work out. All the country need to push them to give the Rohingya the full equal right as other. So as of now, they are in exile. Part of them are inside the border area, you know, part of them are in exile. So this is not functioning like the government, but still, they are mandated by the majority of the people. So I accept them as the government. I have also good relationship with their minister and the many others, you know, especially with the activists, then the political party. So, but still, you know, this is we need the political solution, you know.
How do we get there? Because like you said, you know, at least right now, people who were supporting, you know, the junta and the Buddhist nationalists so religiously for years and years, now they are realizing, you know, that, you know, they are the oppressors in Myanmar. And you say there is this growing acceptance, whether it's surface level or really concrete, it's left to be seen. But there is a growing acceptance of the Rohingya people. But how do we get to the point where Rohingyas are genuinely and meaningfully included in conversations of a new Myanmar? How do we ensure that once the junta is overcome, that Rohingya people will be part of this new Myanmar in a meaningful and inclusive way?
Well, they have been talking that Rohingya will be included, but as citizen, not as an ethnic group. We should have something that guarantee our right in the constitution. So they haven't drafted the constitution yet. They have the charter, but with this charter, you know, we are not yet the member of the NUCC, I mean, the National Unity Consultative Council. So we need to push them. We need to work together to settle all this problem. So the constitution must guarantee our right, and we are not asking, you know, I just mentioned to you, we want the life same as the between that we had between 1948 to 1962. We are asking to restore our right. So since we don't also want to give them a lot of pressure because they are fighting against the military without any support from any country. So there is only the humanitarian aid support, that also through the military junta, not through this revolutionary force. So basically, for the pro-democracy movement, They have got a lot of support from the international community, morally, and maybe financially or something, you know, and also the sanction and all of this are, you know, supported by the European country, US and the Canada and the UK. But for the armed revolution, they have no support at all. No country is supporting. So this fighting against the military is not really easy. The military is the strongest institution in the country. So we don't want to pressure them a lot, but this has to be settled before the new Myanmar is formed. So we really want to see the new Myanmar without discrimination. Everyone has their equal right. There will be the justice, you know. So this country will develop immediately. But as of now, the country is busy in fighting each other. You know? So we have the longest civil war in the world. So I think all this will be ended once the new Myanmar is formed. I also hope that, you know, that since the young people in Myanmar, like the Tinsa Shulayi and the Ha colleague, and also the Generation Z, they are very much supportive to the Rohingya and also all the suffering people in the country. So they will be the leader of the country and there will be the change. So we have to tolerate, we have to be patient. But I still believe, you know, this changing as a positive in the future, in the new federal union, Myanmar, we will have the equal right and the justice.
I think that is a wonderful note to end this conversation. Nisan Luin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me today. I really enjoyed this conversation. Hope to talk to you again.
That was Rohne San Luin, Rohingya activist. This conversation is also available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.